In the Moment is supported by the South Dakota Humanities Council, presenting the South Dakota Festival of Books, September 26th to 28th in Spearfish.
South Dakota kids get ready to pose for that back-to-school picture, but so do the teachers, and their parents are excited too. From SDPB, today is Tuesday, July 29th. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, dear parents of new teachers, today's Teacher Talk balances the worries and fears and joys of the parents who raised the next generation of educators. That's coming a bit later in the hour. We'll also hear today from a few elementary students about what's on their minds, including how to make friends on the first day of school and how to keep modern technology from making humans lazy. But first, we will check in with the new superintendent of the Sioux Falls School District for a look at how to teach and reach nearly 25,000 students. That's coming up after the news. We're broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the Moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. The school supplies are on the shelves. Educators and administrators are looking to a new school year ahead. In just a few weeks, the Sioux Falls School District will welcome around 25,000 students back to the classroom. Beginning this month, Dr. Jamie Nold stepped into the role of Sioux Falls School District Superintendent. Dr. Nold joined me in the Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. Congratulations, as superintendent of the largest school district in the state and the city of Sioux Falls, one of the largest employers, took over in July, right?
Yep, just started in July. The July 1st was the start date, but feel like a lot of the things been there for years, because many of the things still with the assistant superintendent position carried into quite a bit of. And then also working with Dr. Stavem, transitioning a lot of those things, because it was obviously a benefit that I was here and so able to transition some of those things over months earlier. And so really appreciated that process and working with her and going through. But yeah, off and running now, and that entailed a change of offices, which really kind of made it come to a reality at that point in time.
How did you get into education?
You know, started out in Chester High School, booming metropolis way to the north of here, only about 45 minutes to the north here. An incredible experience there, small town, but there was an individual, Randy Jones, that had talked to me at one point in time and said, you'd be a great teacher, you'd love it, you could, you know, teach and coach, and he was right, I did love it. And so that's kind of what spurred me into the area of education and truly loved that avenue, and I've told people that I'd always still greatly appreciate it. I was teaching and coaching. I'd love that aspect of it, but things have just called me in a different direction.
We're going to talk later in this hour with our Teacher Talk educators, Gina Benz and Jackie Wilbur, and they were talking to parents who might be concerned about their kids going into teaching. They would be afraid that they wouldn't make enough money or that they wouldn't have the respect of their community, like in a profession like law or medicine. Were your parents and family members supportive of you going into education?
The two individuals you mentioned, incredible teachers, and they're a great example of the teaching profession. And no, my parents were fully supportive. And we've always talked about the value of the public education and educators and what they do for kids and the impact they have. So, no, there is never a concern. And when I talk to individuals now about it, what an incredible, you know, profession to go into. And so we even started the teacher pathway course, and Gina is one of the teachers in that, to help people to be able to see what does the career of education entail. And so they kind of get to experience that while they're still in high school, which is a great program for them to see. They go down and work in the elementaries one day a week and help out in the elementaries for an hour and some. So for them to be able to see how gratifying it is and to be able to see some of the benefits of that is truly a blessing to have that in a high school setting. So they know. And even if they go through the class and say, I'm not going to be a teacher, that's okay. We still want them to know what the teaching profession is. And so we've been blessed by being able to have that class. We started it a few years back in collaboration with USD. And so I was able to work on that and kick that class off. And she was one of the original teachers I contacted and said, I really want you to be a teacher of this. And she's done an incredible job.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about what your goals are as superintendent.
Yeah, there's so many good things that are happening in the district. I will say one overarching goal is we want to make sure that the Sioux Falls School District can offer things to all students regardless of what their needs are. Some of their needs may become part of a disability they may have, or some of the things that they have may be because they're gifted in a specific area, or they really want to try to do things more in the tech side of things, or they want to do more hands-on. We need to be able to provide opportunities for every single kid to a level that no other district in the state can do. And so that's going to be our ongoing goal, is what can we do to make sure kids have an experience here that cannot be compared to any other place that they could attend school at. And so the Sioux Falls Public Schools can do that. Some things that will open up this fall is with our large animal classes. It'll be out at the CTE Academy, which is really kind of unique because it's in the city of Sioux Falls and people don't think of it. Well, I grew up on a farm and we kind of took it for granted. You experience some of those things. Well, the kids in the city of Sioux Falls don't necessarily do that or able to experience that, but some want to be a veterinarian. And they want to go into that so they could experience some of that while they're still in high school. Some may want to go into ag, or they're going to go into a field that doesn't necessarily deal with large animals, but they may indirectly deal with it because they work with farmers and some of the technology that comes into play because they want to implement that technology. So there's so many things that are touched by ag within our state still. We want to make sure that we honor that and give kids the opportunity to do that. And we're doing so much more with dual credit classes where kids can go in and take those, and AP classes. We're going to come out a little bit later on with this year. We had some of our absolute highest number of enrollments in AP classes and those that completed it and passed it with a 3 or higher. And so we'll talk about more of that as we go along. But truly, what's the ongoing goal is to provide services here for the students in our area that nobody else could provide.
Yeah.
So that's going to be our goal.
We're having a conversation during the week that is the 35th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. And you mentioned all students. Tell me a little bit about service in the Sioux Falls School District for kids with a variety of disabilities.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we do. We have a full range of services. We're even working on a partnership right now with some individuals from SDSU. To add even additional services, especially for those kids that are able to stay with us till the age of 21, and to make sure that they're learning some of those job skills. But we have coursework because some students that may be on an IEP, you wouldn't even know. They just need a little bit of help or support to make sure that things are adequate for them to be able to get their education. And others will
IEP
have much.
IEP, for people who don't know, Individual Education Plan?
Yep.
Okay.
Individual Education Plan or Program, but it is for individuals that would qualify through special education services. And sometimes that's a scary word for people. They hear that word and it's like, my child doesn't. But that's such a wide gamut. We've had kids that have been AP scholars that still receive some special education services because they may have a learning disability in a specific area or some type of a support that is needed. And so people just, we help them to get beyond that. They hear that word. But there's so many services and programs that are available from those that are much more severely handicapped to those that just need a little bit of support and everything in between.
Tell us a little bit about thinking, especially for those older students, they're going to go into college, the military, the workforce, a technical school. How do you provide different pathways for different kids who need, I'm sure, a lot of different services to really figure out what they want to be doing next and make sure they're prepared for the path that they want to be on?
Yeah, and we'll do quite a bit with our counseling services to make sure that we can inventory some of that. That starts a lot of it in the middle schools to where they'll start to see what are some of the different careers, where do I maybe have interest in. They'll go and do visits with the CTE Academy. They'll go to visit some colleges, and we still do that while they're in the middle school. They get into the high school, and they really will start even more and more with the career interest inventories with our counseling program. But then we have so many classes that they can take and electives. And several years back, it was freed up quite a few of the credits that they have to have because they have to have 22 credits to graduate from high school. But so many of those are elective or selectives that they can take and kind of really experiment what do they want to possibly go into or to eliminate that, you know what, I tried that and I don't like it. We also, I mentioned the CTE Academy. They can go out there for two-hour blocks and experience all kinds of things. Some of the things from pre-med to nursing. That's probably one of our largest programs out there is the nursing program. But we also have things with auto body, auto tech, culinary arts. It's a full setup for culinary arts out there that they utilize. We have the media broadcasting that's out there as well, the large animal. They build a couple houses every single year, and one of those they will auction off. The other one goes for Habitat for Humanity. And so there's a lot of really great things that they could go experience out there that they can still do while they're in high school. But we also have internships they can go into and go to a business setting to see, do I really love law? Do I want to go into business setting? Do I want to do this, that, or the other? And experience that while they're in high school. And again, as I said, that's really what we want to do in the Sioux Falls School District is offer all those things so they can see it. And it's really just talking to their guidance counselor to say, how do I find out more about this? And then they'll help set them up in that avenue.
Yeah. What excites you about the upcoming school year?
You know, it's just the newness every year. Mm-hmm. And teaching profession is one of those that does start new every fall, or some of them have different unique schedules. But for the Sioux Falls School District, we start new every fall. And it's just seeing those new faces come back in and the ones that you've seen before. But you love it when kids learn. And just the things you can do for children, and that's going to be one of our themes this fall, is to be the difference. And each and every day, the teachers, they may not know it because it's really a delayed gratification for a lot of teachers, but they'll see a kid on the street somewhere, or they're no longer a kid, they're an adult, and they'll come up to them and say, hey, Dr. Nold, or hey, Mr. Nold, or Coach Nold. And I usually know by how they greet me where I interacted with them at. Because if they say Mr. Nold, it's probably as the principal or a teacher. If it's Coach Nold, obviously I coach them somewhere. But you a lot of times then hear what they're doing now, and you follow up with some of those kids and what incredible things are going on and doing. And so we want to make sure we offer them the opportunity to be able to do whatever they want.
That's Dr. Jamie Nold, superintendent for the Sioux Falls School District. More to our conversation is after the break. You're in the moment on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Let's get back to our conversation now with Sioux Falls School District Superintendent Jamie Nold. How do you coach the teachers in your district?
Yeah.
How do you apply that?
Yeah. We have a great team to do that. Coaching teachers, a lot of times it's done from teacher to teacher, so we have to allow them the time to collaborate together, and we do that in the Sioux Falls School District, and they really need to share ideas with each other. And it isn't necessarily always bringing in somebody from the outside that has this great idea, because we have incredible people here, and they help each other. We also have instructional coaches that will go into different classrooms, especially with those newer teachers, and to help them become more and more proficient with their time and their efforts and their lesson plans. And so we provide that service as well, and that's just something we're able to do because of a larger district. We can do those things. And so we utilize that as well. But we need to coach them up as much as we possibly can, but even more so, we need to connect them with other teachers so that they make sure that they can see what's effective in this classroom. Well, why not replicate that in my classroom? And you can't do everything the same. There's some teachers that lead by a very gregarious voice and actions. Well, somebody else can't do that, but they can do it through lesson planning and some of the things that they design into the lesson. And we share a lot of those things across so they can become better teachers in their own right.
Let's talk about some of the challenges.
Yeah.
Start with absences and attendance, getting kids in the classroom and keeping them there, which is so important.
That is one of the toughest things that we had. Now, we're getting a little bit better each year after COVID, but it went down drastically for years and years. And we saw that across the nation. Mm-hmm. And that's not just a local thing, but we were hit by that as well. And so we continue to put the word out there. We partnered with some other entities last year, and we hired on some attendance liaisons that go to the homes, especially in a few of our elementary schools. They go to the homes, they work with the families, continue to try to make sure that they can take away any of those barriers that will help get a child to school. And, you know, just missing one or two times a month even, when you figure that out, well, that gets to be over 10% of the time. And that's quite a bit of absenteeism. If we're an adult in a job, that'd be a very difficult thing to stay employed in that job if we were missing that amount of time. And so sometimes they don't even know. We'll send out gentle reminders and things like that, but it is so incredibly valuable to have the child there on a daily basis. And unfortunately, we see as they get older and older, they miss more and more. So elementary, middle school misses more than elementary, and high school more than the middle school. But that's a never-ending battle. That we need the help and support of the parents, because if they can get their child that meaningful education, it'll make such a world of difference for that child lifelong. So we're working hard on that part.
What impacts are you still seeing from COVID?
You know, it's been removed. The part that really concerned us to start with was there was an option for individuals, because we were only closed for that fourth quarter, as far as the state goes, just that fourth quarter of COVID. And so we're seeing a lot of impact still, or especially in those first few years, from individuals that kept their children home longer than that. So the start of that next school year, we still probably had, 6,000-7,000 families or students that stayed home and did remote learning. And we found those that probably could manage the remote learning the least were the ones that were staying home, unfortunately, that maybe had a little bit of a lack of the connectivity with internet or some of the things as far as getting the parents involved or more involved to help to make sure things got done. And that hurt them educationally for a few years in there, and we're still recovering from that. And I think we're finally getting back to a point where a lot of those students that had been missing due to the remote learning are now catching back up to their peers. So obviously we hope something like that never happens again. I think we also learned that remote learning is not necessarily the be-all. It can be used at times, and we may still use it when we have inclement weather. But more and more you find that you need to be with a human being and have that human interaction, that human care.
Tell me a little bit about the property tax conversation and how that's impacting you at the district.
It absolutely does, because we rely on property tax to fill a majority of the bucket. And so obviously local property taxes pay for the predominance of the school budget. And we do pick up things, obviously, from federal. We'll pick up some other things from state. But that state aid that comes in usually fills up the remaining part of that bucket. And so we rely on property taxes. So when they talk about reducing property taxes, there's a committee working right now, a legislative research committee that's working right now to see how they can reduce property taxes. When they talk about that, and some of their comments are, we're going to cut it in half. Well, there is no way we could provide the services we're providing, and I think are expected of us to provide for the Sioux Falls community, if they're going to cut property taxes in half and not supplement that in some other way. Now, nobody wants to pay taxes. I don't want to pay more taxes. But we do have to have those funds available to make sure that our roads are in appropriate care, our bridges are there, our safety services, our police departments, our fire and you know, any of those type of safety services, those are all paid through taxes. And so if you reduce property taxes, that's what the city and the county and the schools rely on. And the state relies much more so on the sales tax. And nobody looks at their sales tax. Sales tax has actually been taken almost double. The amount that's gone in through sales tax has almost doubled the amount we take through the property tax. So the state's increasing at a rate of about 4.6% over the last 25 years, and the property tax is only 2.5%. But nobody looks at their sales taxes at the end of the year and says, wow, look how much I paid in sales tax. Well, when you compare that over, it's gone up at such a steep increase comparative to the property tax. But that's something we rely on. And so when they start talking about cutting those things, we got to figure out how's that going to be supplemented back in. This last year, we just got 1.25% from the state. That was difficult because we gave our teaching staff a 2.3% raise. And while you can't do that very often and still make the budget balance. Yeah. And so that does concern us.
All right. What's ahead for the state then? When you fill most of that bucket with property taxes, and then we look at, and then of course there's federal cuts.
Yep.
So maybe we'll start with federal, where we see the administration wanting to get rid of or take steps in the directions of getting rid of the Department of Education, which doesn't mean all those programs go away. We're still figuring out what that means. What are you watching at the federal level that concerns you, and what kind of interventions do you think need to be happening now to make sure that some of those decisions at the federal level don't end up hurting the local level of a school district?
A lot that goes on out there, we're just not sure how it's going to land.
Yeah.
And so right now they've frozen the federal funds, the federal title funds, in a few different areas. For the Sioux Falls School District, it ends up being about $3.5 million. For the state, I think it's about $20 million, and obviously we're a largest chunk of that. And so some of those are the title funds that are frozen that we've already hired 25 staff for, you know, through those dollars. And they obviously do more than just the staffing, but the predominance of an education program, a school, a K-12 school, is staffing. And so when we talk about a $3.5 million that's being frozen right now by the federal level, that impacts about 25 staff. So we got to see what's going to happen there. Obviously, we're hoping that that'll be released at some point in time, but will it be cut in the future? We don't know. And then you talk about the changes with the Department of Education at a federal level and at the state level. That's where those dollars will come to. Well, now there's not been a statement that will change the state level, but at the federal, where will that money go? And who's going to control the allocation of that? And will that allocation change? They've said that it will not change for special education services, that amount that comes from federal, but we don't know. We still are impacted by those things that we utilize those dollars for, which is for some of our most neediest families, some of our families that live in poverty and maybe cannot make those ends meet on their own. And we help to provide additional services for their children to make sure that we catch them up, because we find a lot of times that there's not some of that reading that maybe will happen prior to school starting at kindergarten. Some of those other things that will happen when a child's in some type of a more of a learning center. And so sometimes those kids miss out, and it takes a little bit more staffing and help to catch them back up, especially the programming. And so we are a little bit nervous in the fact that if some of those go away, what will happen with some of those families that have the greatest need? And so we're looking at that to see how we can help and plan ahead. But it's very difficult because nobody can give you the answer of what will happen right now.
So you've hired people that you don't have the money to pay at this point?
At this point in time, that $3.5 million that's frozen, we have not been given that. And specifically based on that $3.5 million, yes, we've hired over 25 staff to fill those positions. And now it's very difficult. You can't just lay them off. And then all of a sudden, a week later, the money does come in. You know, how do you go about that? So we've determined that with our board, we're going to maintain those employments through this year. And if those dollars don't come in, then obviously we're going to have to look at what type of budgetary cuts we make for the next year, because that'll impact us about $3.5 million for this year.
School vouchers, that's also a state conversation and is becoming a national conversation, opening the door for more vouchers for private schools. How is that impacting your district?
It is something that we are absolutely opposed to. And vouchers are a new tax on our community. And right now, when we only received 1.25% from the state in the dollars that came from the state, because they said that's all they have, to add a new tax on top of that is difficult for us to be able to swallow that. And so it can be stated in a lot of different ways, but it is absolutely a brand new tax that'll be put on people, because they're going to be paying out dollars to individuals that they haven't been normally paying them out to. Now, they'd said that it'll give more choice to individuals to be able to go to private schools or homeschool. And that worries us, because we saw that coming through COVID. And those individuals that stayed at the homeschool sometimes or remote learning were not the families that were best equipped to be able to do that. And if you offer a family that's living in poverty $3,000 per child to keep them at home for homeschool, and if they have three or four children, you're talking, you know, $12,000. That's hard for them to pass up. But the worry is those children that'll be there, will they get the adequate education? And right now, there's no requirements on that. They don't have any type of testing they have to go through. They don't have any type of mandated tests that they will take to make sure that the children are staying on pace. And it's just at the whim of the individuals. Now, there's some families that do an incredible job with homeschooling, and they've made that choice, and that's okay. And they're at home right now and homeschooling, but if you add additional dollars that we're going to be paying, that's why it's a brand new tax. Same way with those who are at private schools. Right now, they're paying the tuition as a family to go to that private school. It's a choice they make, and absolutely have no problem with that. We have great relationships with our private schools, but if they're going to start to pay those individual families dollars to go there, that's going to be a brand new tax. And so the other part of it is there's a lot being said that'll help those that are in the lowest income brackets. We spent last year about $160,000 to help those that were homeless get to the schools, to make sure that they get to the schools that they go to and attend. And I'm quite certain that private schools or other entities will not pay that same amount of money to make sure that transportation gets there. So those that don't have the transportation means are going to be bound by not being able to access those dollars, unless they do the homeschool method, which we've seen that maybe will regress the education for those children. So there's a lot of concerns that come up with vouchers, but let there be no question, it is a brand new tax.
Also a case out of the U.S. Supreme Court saying parents have a right to opt out of some language in a different school district, not in South Dakota.
Yep.
When political things like that happen nationally, how do you talk to principals, administrators, and teachers? What kind of leadership do you provide? Because you're not in the classroom every day selecting the book that they're going to read in story time. or planning when a health education class is. What kind of leadership do you provide to make sure people feel confident going into the classroom that that their lesson plans are going to be square, effective, and good for everybody?
And we do. We go through and we have groups that come together to do the curriculum studies, and we lay out exactly what's going to be able to be used in classrooms. So we make sure that we preview that in advance. And it's a group of teachers. So it's teachers that will come in and do that. There's some administration in there, instructional coaches, the curriculum coordinators, and they work together to make sure that they lay that out. And then we still have a process like in things that you talk about with the health classes. There's a process that a parent can opt their child out of portions of that. And we figure out an alternative educational source for them during that point in time that they're opted out of the classroom, out of that session. So we want to make sure that we honor that. A lot of the things are agreed upon. We even have parents that sit on some of those curriculum reviews to make sure that we get the information in there that's supposed to be in there, the most appropriate. But there's other things that we have processes for them to be able to opt out of that. And it's okay. We don't mind that. And parents should have some choice in that. As long as it is something that they feel their child, they did not want them to be part of, we'll figure out a different process for that. So absolutely, we have that in place. And I think, though, the steps we go through, the teachers being involved, parents being involved, the administration being involved, we're all very aware of it. But then if they ever have questions, we help to answer those at the central office as well.
I feel like we should wrap up with wrestling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you've been the voice of wrestling on SDPB for our high school athletics coverage. What makes a great wrestler? What is wrestling like in South Dakota right now? Because you see, again, those athletes come from all across the state. You create their bio sheets. You're talking to them, getting to know them as athletes.
I love that aspect of it. And an important part of my life was athletics. And it's not the only thing, because you have the academics piece. That's what we're there in school for. But I also don't ever want to dismiss it that there's a lot of things that kids do that are extracurricular. And I even told my own two kids that you got to be involved in at least two things. I don't care what they are. And so debate was a hit for one of them, show choir and some other things was, and volleyball was a hit for another one. And kids got to be involved. Sport of wrestling was something that I gravitated towards all the way through elementary, middle school, high school, and then into college, and then coached it for several years after that. So I love being able to do that and watching the state tournaments and other tournaments that we have. And I think it's the same for any sport and any activity in life in general, that what makes a good wrestler, they have to be dedicated. And so no matter what you do, you have to be dedicated to what you're doing. Obviously, it isn't meant that you put off your family or other things, but you got to be dedicated to things and put your will and effort into it. And if you do that, you're going to become a good person no matter what you're trying. And obviously, you use your talents to benefit you as well. But no matter what you do, you have to have that effort and commitment and that drive to be able to do it.
Yeah. That's Dr. Jamie Nold, superintendent for the Sioux Falls School District. We will take a quick break. When we come back, our Teacher Talk educators look at what it means to send your kid back to the classroom when they're a first-year teacher. You're in the Moment on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota kids are preparing for the first day of a new school year. We'll hear from a few of them in a moment. But first, students aren't always the new kids on the block. For today's Teacher Talk, we're asking what it means to send your child to the front of the classroom as a teacher. Gina Benz and Jackie Wilbur join me with advice for the parents of new teachers. Now, Gina Benz has taught for more than 25 years. She has helped develop Teacher Pathway. That's a program that helps students on the road to careers in education. Benz is also a recipient of the prestigious Milken Educator Award. She teaches at Roosevelt High School in Sioux Falls. Dr. Jackie Wilbur is a faculty member and director of the Center for Student and Professional Services at the University of South Dakota School of Education. She has been a middle school and high school teacher, as well as a public librarian. She's also an experienced registered yoga teacher. And you can find, as always, the Teacher Talk blogs on our website, sdpb.org/teachertalk. And you can download Teacher Talk as a podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And you wanted to talk to parents of future teachers, Gina, because you are one.
I am one. And as I'm sitting and staring at the bumblebees, I'm so excited for my own daughter, because a year from now, she's going to become a Spanish teacher.
Wow.
High school or middle school. And I can't contain my excitement because teaching has been just a wonderful profession for me, and it's a wonderful way to serve our communities, to serve our nation, to be a teacher, and it's a wonderful way to make connections. I can't wait for her to do that. Now, I have to give a shout out to my son, too. I cannot neglect him. He wants to be an accountant. I'm excited for him, too. So I think ultimately I'm excited because my kids have both found a passion that they're excited about.
And that's not for nothing, because if you are the parent of a future teacher, even if you have concerns with that, your child has a passion. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about what might be lighting them up. And you do hear concerns. My parents are worried. Mm-hmm. My parents said I could do better. My parents don't want me to be poor. I'm reading from the beginning of your companion blog. Are those things that you have heard?
Yes, I'm not lying. Those are quotes. Yeah, there are quotation marks, and they are quotes. And especially the one that, you know, gets me is when the parents say, you can do better. Because teaching is, again, so important in serving the community. It's that collective care we all have to take for our nation's children, for our world's children. We have to all do our part to take care of them and raise them up.
Jackie, do you hear that from your students at the University of South Dakota, where they might say a family member is concerned? And are there themes to those concerns?
A couple of responses there. Yes, I will hear that on occasion, but I'm also now working with folks who are on their path, right? Mm-hmm. And so they have committed and they're moving towards this goal. But I also, as part of my role, will meet with incoming prospective students and talk with their families about how they're thinking about becoming a teacher. And so I think, yes, that this is kind of a collective societal stigma that exists with teaching. And I'm really glad we're having this conversation, because what I do with folks on an individual level is dispel a lot of these worries and what I would call myths about the profession. And I'm glad that we have the opportunity to do this at a larger conversation today.
So some data here that Gina has in her blog post, a 2022 study from out of the University of Chicago, only 18% of respondents said they're likely to encourage a young person to become a teacher.
I don't even know what to say to that, except that's the reality we're working within.
Yeah.
And I get to teach Teacher Pathway, where students explore if teaching's for them.
Yeah.
And surely teaching is not for everybody. But I encourage everybody to at least give it a thought, because there are some students who've never even considered the idea of being a teacher when I present it to them.
Yeah. Interesting.
Never even considered it. But, if you're
that's weird to me, because what occupation are you more confronted with as a child growing up in America? Whatever your parents do, any place that you go to, whether that's a restaurant or a hospital or, thing that agriculture. But you could grow up not even knowing where your food comes from. But you can't grow up in America without knowing, unless you're homeschooled and really sheltered from the fact that school classrooms exist, which is unlikely, because most homeschool students have, some kind of pathway where they see a classroom situation and someone's teaching them. You see teachers all the time. You think that would be the number one thing kids would say they want to do, because they see it. What's going on there? Is it invisible?
Well, I will say that I hear that most from my students of color. So they don't see people who look like them teaching.
Okay. Interesting.
And that's just one response to a really complicated question that you asked.
Jackie, do you have any thoughts on this? Why would it be, when you're so often in the company of teachers, that you wouldn't immediately have so many kids say, I want to be that. I want to do what she does. I want to do what he does.
I think it's a complicated question as well, but I know it's the intent behind Teacher Pathway, behind Educators Rising, behind this national trend of Grow Your Own programs, is to say, you do see these folks every day. You do admire them and respect them and care about them and appreciate the work that they do. Let's give you more information about what this would look like for you to become one yourself. And I think we have so many programs that are like that in other career fields, with career and technical education, with Future Farmers of America, with FBLA and Future Business Leaders. We do that to encourage students to get kind of the behind the scenes look of what these different career opportunities are. And I think the assumption is made, or maybe has been in the past, like they must already know what a teacher does because they interact with them every day. But being a student is not the same thing as seeing the career path of what a teacher would be. So I'm really proud of the work that Teacher Pathway is doing, because it is helping students make that transition from seeing these folks that they're interacting with on a student level and then noticing, oh, this is what the job of a career path of an educator would look like.
Interesting. I like that. Yeah, I suppose it'd be the same thing with parents. Like, not necessarily. I remember one time my daughter said she didn't want to have kids when she grew up, and I was like, why not? She was like, it looks really hard. And I was like, oh, what have I been projecting about parenthood to her? I had to really kind of rethink that for a little bit. But it was also a well-thought-out comment from her, because she did see what was happening. You know, she saw me as a real person who was making choices, and those choices were for her benefit and not necessarily for mine. And she was being very self-aware about the timing of when she'd be willing to do that, because she had certain career ambitions. So it was a thoughtful comment at the end of the day.
Absolutely. And my Teacher Pathway students often say, I was surprised that this is part of teaching. I was surprised at how hard doing a lesson is. Right. I was surprised at how much teachers have to think about. Or I was surprised at how rewarding it is to help students with their work.
So let's talk about one of the other big concerns, going up to your quotes at the top, poverty. Teachers don't make a lot of money. Help us understand the financial future of someone who wants to go into education.
So first of all, you know, the amount of money you make, you want, you need, is different for all sorts of people. Mm-hmm. And a lot depends on what you're comparing it to. So I went with some national statistics and found that median income in the United States is about $38,000. And in South Dakota right now, in our more urban districts and districts on reservations, teachers are starting at $50,000, $51,000, $52,000, $53,000. So the starting pay has risen dramatically, especially in the last decade, because we were losing teachers and we were realizing teachers are important. We need to pay them and help them have this life that they want. Now, that's not true for all of South Dakota. There's also some rural districts where teachers are starting more at like $43,000, $44,000. But in the whole scope of all Americans, teachers are leading a really solid middle-class lifestyle with usually very good benefits, including strong retirement plans.
Yeah. You said the cars in the parking lot are reliable but not fancy.
Yeah. And for me personally, and I think this shift came as I aged, but I need enough. I'm not striving to be uber wealthy. I don't even know if I want the stress of that. I need enough. I need some security. But I guess everyone's enough is defined differently. Different.
But there are also different levels of teachers, Jackie, right? I mean, there are teachers who make moving up to administration, moving up to, you know, superintendent roles. There are different ways where you can increase your income as well.
Absolutely. That's one of the things I talk with folks about the most when they're considering majoring in education, is just the versatility and the trajectory that one's career could go on. We're looking at educator starting salary, which if you compare that to other degrees, is very comparable. If you think about getting a four-year degree in any major, starting salary of $53,000 a year is a very comparable salary. And something I remind folks of too is that's a 9-month contract as opposed to a 12-month contract. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that's usually on the radar of an 18-year-old, but having really good health insurance and a great retirement plan and starting it as early as 22 can make all the difference. And so those things, I think, are really solid reasons to consider the education profession from a financial standpoint. But then that major, like you were just talking about, is incredibly versatile. You can go on to get master's or doctoral degrees in school psychology and administration. You could go into the athletic world and become a coach. You also could pivot more into the ed tech companies or work for textbook companies. There's a lot of different avenues that people can go into. HR, training. If you're able to explain and know the best practices in conveying information and helping people learn and helping them stay engaged, I really think that there's a lot of different options that you can take. So,
in other words, if your parents say you could, quote, do better, mm-hmm. that has something to say about their aspirations, not necessarily yours. Do you feel like you could do better with your life, Jean? After more than 25 years in the classroom, do you think I could have done better?
This is the perfect job for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we just all place different value on different professions. Mm-hmm. In that quote that I'm thinking of, the parents really, really, really wanted their son to be a doctor. Okay. And he did become a doctor.
Okay.
But I think all professions are valuable in different ways.
Maybe someday he'll teach in the medical school because he wants to be a teacher.
I would love that. He'd be amazing.
He might find his way back to teaching in some other capacity.
His wife is a teacher.
Okay.
So I'm sure they support each other greatly in their professions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any final thoughts on this of what you want? If you are a parent whose child is starting in the classroom, are there ways that you can support them in their first year in the classroom? Jackie, let's start with you there.
I wanted to say, what better place to make a difference in the world than in a classroom full of young people every day? I never went to bed at night and wondered, oh, did I contribute to society today when I was in a high school classroom or middle school classroom? It's evident every single day that what this job is really matters and that it impacts people and that we contribute to the future of America. And I think that, in my mind, there's no better way to be a good citizen than to contribute to youth.
Yeah. Gina, final thoughts from you.
I'm just so excited for my future teachers, my daughter, all, and the listeners here who are considering teaching or who are in teaching, because what you're doing matters. It is of service to your country, to your community, to children. You are caring for children who, well, let me say this personally. I've cared for children who have a father who's a U.S. senator, and I've cared for children who have a father who's in the penitentiary for decades.
Yeah.
And it brings such purpose and joy and meaning to my life to get to know all of those students. All of them, and to help them learn and grow so that they have more opportunities and options in their own lives.
You can find the companion blog at sdpb.org. Teacher Talk. Teacher Talk is a podcast. You can download it on your favorite podcast platform, get caught up on many, many hours of our conversations, and welcome back, you guys. Thanks for being here.
Oh, feels so good.
It does. Thanks, Lori.
Download your supply list and sharpen your pencils. Families across South Dakota are getting ready for back to school. Now, our kids have a lot to say about school, from what they wish they could eat on the playground to the things that worry them about the future. In the moment, producer Ari Youngerman and I spent the day at Eugene Field Elementary in Sioux Falls during the last week of the previous school year. We set up our microphones and audio equipment in the library. We placed colored index cards on the table with a series of questions. And when each class came in, students picked their own questions and stepped up to the microphone to be heard. Let's start today with room 40X. Brantley is ready for recess.
What I like to do most at recess is play Foursquare.
How do you play Foursquare?
So there's four squares. One spot is a king, one spot is a queen, one spot is the knight or the whatever you want to call it, and then one spot is just the bad spot. It's the starting spot. And the king serves it to the starting spot, and you have to try to get people out to get king.
Is there a ball? Okay,
yeah.
So how do you get somebody out?
There's a bunch of ways. You can make it hit their body, or you could make it bounce in their square twice, or you can make it hit their square once, then bounce out, or you hit it to them, and then they hit it too hard, and it goes out.
Are you pretty good at this game?
Yes. Yeah.
Now, the best part of an interview is the follow-up question, and the students of Eugene Field had plenty. Brantley's fellow students wanted to know more. If there was something you could add to your playground, what would you add?
Probably a football field.
Here's one more question from the class. If the playground had a food cart, what kind of food would you want on it?
Probably my mom's homemade hamburgers.
Nice. Hamburger cart at Eugene Field recess. I like that. Thank you. Good job. All right.
A-R-I-A.
A-R-I-A. Aria. Aria, looking back, what advice would you give to yourself on the first day of school?
Definitely to think more about making more friends and also thinking about how I want to get good grades by cheating or by doing it properly.
And what's the best way to do it, cheating or doing it properly?
Doing it properly, because when you're little and you don't know the answers, you're obviously going to try to cheat, but instead of thinking it through.
Why is it important to do it properly and think it through, even when it's hard?
Because if someone catches you, or not, there could still be consequences. Because if no one catches you, it'll stick with you through the years. But if someone does catch you, it might just be like, you have to be watched while doing your next test.
So how do you make friends on the first day of school? What are some ways that you can come in on the first day of school and set yourself up to make friends?
Definitely by walking up to people and saying hello.
And then what if they say hello back?
Ask what's your favorite thing to do, or you can just say, do you want to be friends?
Yeah.
My name is Landon.
Landon, how do you spell that?
L-A-N-D-E-N.
And is it your birthday today?
Yes.
Happy birthday, Landon.
Thank you.
Do you have special plans?
Yes. After school, I'm going to go bowling and just relax and open presents and eat cake.
Nice. That sounds like a really good time. Okay. Are you worried about the future?
Yes, I am a little bit because I just don't want a ton of people to get lazy because I feel like robots maybe will do more things and we won't have as much things that we can do.
Like what kinds of things do you think robots should be allowed to do and what kinds of things do you think robots should never be allowed to do for humans?
I think like they can work in factories maybe or like package things, but like I think like working in school, I think there should be a real teacher or like other real jobs like grooming or like construction. I think they should only work in maybe like factories.
Who gets to decide?
Not me, but if everybody listens, maybe we can, but really it's up to the president, but nobody really gets to choose beside whoever is at the top of who's in charge.
All right. Follow-up questions for Landon about the future and maybe people getting a little lazy because of robots. Go ahead.
Would you let the robots...
The question from the floor is, would you let robots work at McDonald's?
That depends. If McDonald's changes, maybe, but I don't think that would be a good decision because I think they would mess up some stuff and not know how to do stuff that humans can do.
Thank you. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
In the moment.
Brantley, Aria, and Landon, just a few of the students at Eugene Field Elementary in Sioux Falls. Producer Ari Youngeman and I spent the day at the school helping students learn how to ask questions, tell stories, and make a podcast. We called our program LoriCorps. We'll bring you more insight from LoriCorps on future programs. That's our show for today. We hope that it served you. From all of us at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.